Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today, we are pleased to be joined by Rebecca Winteridge Knox, who is the Better Building Campaign Director at the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. How are you doing, Rebecca?
Doing well. How are you, Ted?
Good, good, good. We're also happy to be joined by the Executive Director of MCAN, Ms. Sarah Dooling. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm doing well. My mute button is like moving around my screen. That's a very odd thing. But yes, I'm so happy to be here.
I think everyone understands when that mute button dances off into some new place. I mean, we're in a new age, aren't we? We're all, anyway, so Rebecca, I looking to you for maybe a little background on a story that's somewhat arcane. Seems like it's not particularly relevant, but is one of the things that goes to the heart of a lot of other important topics. And I'll very briefly say, let's just say, what's a building code? A building code are the rules by which you construct a building, right? In Florida, after a hurricane, they go in and say, oh, you got to use hurricane bolts to keep the roof on your building, right? As we evolve, we realize that building codes need to include considerations of energy efficiency. And in fact, as we move forward now, we have more complicated building codes, in particular things like a net zero building code that makes very specific, you know, threefold description of how buildings should be built in order to be energy efficient. Of course, setting those building codes both nationally and internationally is a huge project in which there's lots of different perspectives might be included. It's my understanding that there is a national building code organization that recently started to allow cities and towns to participate in the planning of these building codes. And of course, those cities and towns started to put in lots and lots of green energy efficiency stuff. And recently, the hammer has come down, and the big vested interests of developers and natural gas people, who of course like to have a natural gas heater in that new building, they came in and basically gummed up the process for the development of new building codes. And that gets my nose bent out of joint, as my sainted mother would say. Anyway, so tell me the story about the development of these building codes at this very high sort of national level, and how does it ripple back down into Massachusetts?
Yeah, well, I think you gave a great, very enticing opening, Ted, to what some might call a more dull topic, but like you said, it's quite dramatic. So historically in the U.S., we didn't have any kind of national building standard. Cities and towns tended to fall into, you know, states and then regions that were kind of using a piecemeal approach to meet local or state efficiency standards. As we've realized that buildings are a major part of the climate solution and that transitioning our new construction over time to zero energy, zero emissions, is a major part of how we can tackle the climate crisis, the IECC, or International Energy Conservation Code, has become an increasingly relevant policy tool to help states, towns, and cities transition to lower emitting buildings. So like you said, Ted, originally this was not necessarily a very democratic process by which the IECC was developed. In recent, I want to say the last decade or so, the code development process took place. Basically, the National Code Council would set what sorts of provisions would be voted on for each new iteration of the code every 3 years, and anyone who was eligible to vote, so municipal employees and officials, appointed and electeds, would actually vote yes or no for each provision, and then that would be how we would get our new code.
And that was a relatively recent development, right?
It was. So for some time, you had to actually go in person. Mm-hmm. I want to say as soon as, you know, recent as like 2009, you had to go to Las Vegas to vote in person if you wanted to vote. Luckily, in the last couple of code cycles, it's been a bit more accessible. And back in 2018, MCAN worked with our partners at the Sierra Club, at the Northeast Energy Efficiency Partnerships, and at the Metropolitan Area Planning Council to really try and decide, like, who all is eligible to vote on this code, and how can we get the word out that this vote is happening? We found that only 400 people in the entire country had voted in 2015 on a code that most of the nation uses. And Massachusetts is statutorily required to adopt within a year of its national passage. So pretty shocking. Yeah.
In the just the 400 people that were voting and presumably had the interests of the localities at heart, I mean, that is to be balanced against the sort of the industry pressures on a building code, right? I mean, the real estate industry doesn't want any increase in the cost or even the perception of an increase in cost of a newly built building, right? The gas people don't want any disruption in what they have now as a nice business, right? So they seem to, they have been basically controlling, in a sense, this building code for a long time because they're a vested interest. And the noble 400 people you referred to, they're like new additions to the process, right? And somewhat disruptive. Is that fair?
I should maybe clarify. So the 400 that voted in 2015 were not necessarily people concerned with energy efficiency. So these were mostly members, I would say, of the National Association of Home Builders, developers. So people concerned, I would say, more with enforcing the code and less with transitioning their communities to zero emissions.
Okay.
So we used the 2021 code cycle as a chance to really change that narrative of who is eligible and who should be involved in this process by contacting city councilors, select board members, planning department members, energy commission members. We were able to really broaden the number of people who knew what a building code it was and why it's important, and were excited and energized to take part in this really important vote. And this couldn't have happened without our incredible network and incredible partners. This was really a grassroots-led effort that involved a lot of people making calls and walking through some pretty dense material with their local appointees and electeds. So,
and that's what you've been doing, Rebecca, for the last few years, is sort of getting into good trouble, I think is the phrase, right? Going out and rattling this other organization by bringing new people into it, right?
Yeah, I've definitely been pretty involved with that.
Wow. So then what happened?
So then we learned that there was a motion being introduced to dismantle the voting process for future iterations of the code. I should say that we were really successful in our effort to register a lot of new voters. We registered over 500 in Massachusetts alone. And so we were able to really tip the scales towards a more energy efficient code, securing between an 8% and a 14% efficiency boost for both residential and commercial. Obviously, this got the attention of our opposition. And like I said, they introduced this proposal to say, you know what, this vote has become too inclusive. These climate people are now involved. We need to close it off, essentially, and transform it from a vote to a standards development process. We just learned about this a few weeks ago, and it's been a really disappointing development. I'll be honest. It's pretty,
this organization is probably some sort of nonprofit, right? That does the development, and they are kind of I wouldn't say impervious, but I mean they have a lot of authority over how this thing gets drawn up because it's their thing, right? So when is the next cycle of this building code iteration?
So we would have been gearing folks up to begin to register to vote as soon as the fall of 2021. So I imagine that there will be plenty of discussions on the national and on the state level and on the local level about how to influence and how to make a positive influence on the 2024 IECC. One way that we know we can affect it is to have a voice in who gets to be on the committees that will now be in charge of developing this new code. So even though it's no longer going to be something that's voted on by our nation's mayors and city councilors, et cetera, we can still make sure that climate-oriented people are on the committees that are in charge of the development process. And this is something that we've been engaging with our national partners on.
And just for my information, the state of Massachusetts has mandated that the state will follow this code. right?
That's true. Yeah.
So the ultimate hammer here is for the state to say, well, we're not going to follow this code anymore because it doesn't keep us, doesn't satisfy us. It's like having the, you know, the tornado code in downtown Boston, the tornado building code in downtown Boston, right? It's not relevant to us. Is that something that is under consideration? I mean, that's a, I understand this is all like happened within the last 6 weeks, right? So, you know, no one knows what's really going to happen, but.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple different pieces at play here. So first of all, we don't want to make sure that Massachusetts is veering off the ICC and leaving the rest of the nation behind.
Okay.
Majority of new construction is still going to be affected by this code. So we want to still engage in the process, very importantly for that reason. But I will say, I think that Massachusetts has an opportunity to come out strong on net zero buildings right now to say, you know what, the national code is no longer helping us serve to meet our climate goals. This is our moment to come out in front with a net zero building code that in the next few years, all cities and towns have adopted, and to provide resources to our communities so that it is cost effective to be building these new buildings.
Wow. Very interesting. I may tell you, there's always another turn of the screw on these things, isn't it? It's like an ongoing. So let me change the story a little bit, Rebecca. You have been with MCAN since
September of 2018, so two and a half years. Yeah.
2.5 years, and have done all this marvelous stuff. My understanding is that you're going to go on to graduate school, right?
I am. Yes,
congratulations. I am. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there who are wishing you all the best. Tell me, when you walked in, you know, it's like wet behind the ears, dewy-eyed, to look at MCAN in 2018, and now you're this veteran who's been done all this good work. What have you seen? What's the trajectory, you think, of the kinds of stuff you've worked on? And what do you project over the next couple of years? What do you think?
Yeah, great question. So I have to say, I think I've really seen and come to appreciate the power of grassroots organizing and changing the narrative of what is possible in terms of our policy outcomes, in terms of our climate goals, in terms of how we build our buildings, in terms of my campaign. And so I think having engaged with this really dedicated team of local activists who became motivated and inspired to, you know, educate and lobby their local officials to take part in this IECC vote has changed the narrative of codes in Massachusetts. So I would say that the net zero stretch code, this phrase, is now regarded as something most people understand, which 2.5 years ago was not so much the case. And I'm really hopeful that now that a lot of the Commonwealth and a lot of people concerned with climate have a stronger grasp on why exactly building codes are important, we can continue to use our state building codes as a real site of transformation. And I'm very excited for Sarah Dooling to continue this work. She is our ED on the call right now. I've been dominating the conversation, but she has been just incredible in thinking about how we can incorporate equity, affordability, and a more diverse coalition into our Better Buildings campaign. And I'm really excited to follow the work that I know she's going to continue to lead by really centering affordability and access when we talk about better buildings. So I know I mentioned this before, but a net zero lifestyle is not just something we want for people that can afford to buy it. We want policy goals that'll actually improve the lives of people who are currently most burdened by poor air quality, by high energy bills, by polluting facilities. So yeah, hats off to Sarah.
Well, Rebecca, thank you. I guess I would personally, it's been a pleasure working with you for the last several years.
Well.
I wish you the best of luck going forward. And I'm sure we will, our paths will cross again sometime in the future. So what I'll do is we'll put up links to a couple of the things that we've talked about on the blog. That's to be at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question, you can send us an email about the podcast to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to this show. You're probably listening to the show on your smartphone. Please ask your friends to listen to the show on their smartphones and rate us on the various podcast distribution apps. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support, and we want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Rebecca, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Ted. And thank you, Sarah.
Thanks to you, Sarah, for being here as well.
Thank you, Ted. And I just want to say to everybody listening, MCAN is really going to miss Rebecca. She's been an invaluable member of our team. And she has laid this, what she described this afternoon, she really laid the foundation with many other hands for, you know, at least making sure that net zero is a concept that more and more people know about. And working with Rebecca, MCAN has really cemented a vision of what net zero communities look like. It starts with buildings, it includes landscapes, and it must include labor. So it's a very much of an ecosystem approach, and Rebecca has been a key member in realizing this vision.
Thank you so much. Well, thanks again. Thanks to you both for being here. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.